This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Trevor Chappell.
Frances Falling is a singer and musicologist from Schumann House in Leipzig joining us on the program this morning. Hi, Frances.
Hi, nice to talk with you.
Frances, tell us about that piece of music I'm playing.
Oh, her piano concerto. Well, she composed it at 15, and she, Robert Schumann, later becoming her husband, actually helped her a bit with the orchestration, and she performed it for the first time when she was 16 at the piano with the famous Gewandhaus Orchestra, and Mendelssohn conducted. So that was a quite exciting time in her life.
So we're talking about a very talented young woman by the sound of it.
Absolutely. She was pretty much at the height or at one of the peaks of her career, even as a teenager already. She already had a decade-long career behind her.
Why don't we know as much about Clara, Frances, as we possibly should?
I think that musicology in the past couple of decades has helped us a lot on that. But before that, yes, she kind of was the woman at his side or even in his shadow, the wife of Robert Schumann, where actually during the time where she was alive, she was overshadowing him with her fame as a concert pianist. I'm not sure. It's hard to say. One of the reasons is probably because they just didn't have recording technology back in the 19th century at that time. And so her main thing that she did was to perform. So she kind of was maybe forgotten a bit as a performer since we don't have recordings of her. That's one theory.
Let's go back a little ways and take a look at Clara when she was younger. I mean, if she's writing music like that at the age of 15 and performing like that at the age of 16, how old was she when she was learning, and what was her process for learning? Who taught her?
That's a good question. Well, it began kind of involuntarily. She was too young to really have a say. Her father, Friedrich Wieck, started lessons with her after his wife had divorced him when Clara was four. And she came back. It was the law in Saxony that the father had the entire right to the children in that day, starting at the age of five. So she came back to live with him, and he started very systematically teaching her lessons, piano lessons every day. She had to practice for 2 hours, take a lesson with him for an hour, and then also go on a walk outside for 2 hours. That was his regimen that he began with her.
So was he nasty? Was he mean? Or was he just wanting the best for his daughter?
I mean, I wasn't there. From what you can read, she definitely, it was a very strict upbringing, and he had a very clear goal in mind for her. He wanted to make her one of the most famous pianists in history. That was his goal from the get-go, sort of like a Mozart, except as a girl. So it's interesting that he picked one of his eldest daughter to be this person. He did have a few sons, but apparently she really did have a knack for it, and she enjoyed performing. So I think as long as she practiced and did what she was supposed to and played the things that he wanted her to play, he probably was fine with her and even gave her a little bit of a share of her earnings from her performing. He kept most of it. But yeah, I'm sure he could be strict when he wanted to.
When you're saying controlling, because as I was doing some reading to talk about it, is it true that he wrote her diary for her?
Until she was 14. He wrote it in his handwriting. We can see, "I did not practice well today," or something. And then it really was Friedrich Wieck's handwriting. So that, yeah, I think that attests very well to the sense of control that he had over her and organizing all of her concerts like a concert manager, what she would play, what she would earn from playing it, which instruments to rent, and all of those things that you had to worry about back then. He did all of that for her and basically almost ignored the rest of the family as he took her on tours.
At what age was she touring and playing concerts?
Well, he had her play her first piece and concert in public in the famous Gewandhaus in Leipzig when she was 9. Then she played for Goethe in Weimar, you know, the great poet, when she was 12. And he said she plays with the strength of 6 boys. He was very impressed by her. And then he took her on her first tour to Paris when she was 13. So she was already a European concert pianist in her early teens.
So in that case, was she considered a child prodigy? And was she recognized well by society as being a great pianist?
Definitely. She was definitely considered a child prodigy. When she came to Vienna, they even had a competition to name a torte and bake a torte after her, the torte à la Vique. And of course, you have to remember that she was praised as the child prodigy, but the more famous she became, the more famous he became as a pedagogue, and his methods became very famous. And that's how he attracted students like Robert Schumann to come to Leipzig, because they really wanted to study with this famous Friedrich Wieck.
So was he a good, was her father a good musician as well, or was just a good teacher?
I don't know if he did much public performing himself. He had a piano store there in Leipzig, and he taught lots of piano students. He was pretty much self-taught. He was always quite proud of that. So I think his goal in life was really to turn out great musicians and great pianists.
How did they meet? Because it's an interesting story within itself, Frances.
Yes. Well, Robert Schumann really wanted to study with Friedrich Wieck, because he had heard Clara Wieck play, and he had heard of this great pedagogue, and he was not very interested in his law studies that he was doing as a young man. And so when he was 20, he decided he really wanted to study music. And so he knocked on their door in Leipzig, and Friedrich Wieck took him in as a student, and he actually lived with them in the family for 2 years. And at that point, Clara was 11 and Robert Schumann 20. It was apparently more of a brother-sisterly relationship until several years later, when she was 16 and playing this piano concerto. And on her 16th birthday, they had their first kiss, and things kind of took a turning point from there.
You would think a controlling father wouldn't be particularly keen on that.
Absolutely not. As soon as he got wind of it, he took Clara on her next prolonged tour, and eventually did tell Robert Schumann he was no longer welcome under their roof, especially when he proposed when she was 18. We have the letters, which is very sweet, because they were not allowed to see one another, or prevented from seeing one another, so they got engaged via letters. And so we have this proposal, and apparently he asked on her 18th birthday, and Friedrich Wieck set his foot down and said, absolutely not, you're no longer to see my daughter. He didn't want to lose what he had been building this career for over a decade, of course.
So for him, the issue wasn't necessarily that he wasn't keen on the relationship. He didn't want her leaving and going off with someone else, and him thus losing his credentials, you could say.
I think that played a large part in it, definitely. The income she brought in, the source of pride that she was for him. And, of course, you have to think of the 19th century, and we're living in the 21st century, and as a woman, I can't imagine it. But in the 19th century, it was just the unspoken rule that as soon as you married, you no longer performed publicly if you were doing so beforehand. So you just kept your performing to a private venue, and you no longer earned money with performing, because that was the job of the husband. And so she would have had to immediately become the Hausfrau that Friedrich Wieck always hated for her to become. So that was one consideration, the fear that could happen, which of course it didn't. And then maybe the age difference, and the fact that he had seen Robert Schumann not really making a whole lot of progress in his own career. He hurt his finger and had to give up his dream of becoming a concert pianist, and he was little-known composer at that time. So it's understandable that he could have had his qualms about the relationship.
Sorry, my jaw just dropped quite a considerable distance when you said that. Was that right, that women weren't allowed to perform or make money after marriage?
It was at least for women of the bourgeois society, which Clara grew up in. So I guess if you were an artist from an artist family, you were kind of an exception to that rule. But she basically grew up with the bourgeois rules, I suppose. Mm. And so that was absolutely not an option in a normal marriage. Now, if you look at the way that it continued, that's not what happened. Clara was the main breadwinner for the entire marriage, and for the family of seven children, she earned most of the income.
Max, good morning.
Good morning, Trevor, and good morning to your guests. I just want to ask about the composer Brahms, Johannes Brahms, who had an eye. He was a great friend of the family of Schumann, and just how serious was his relationship with Clara? I mean, he certainly had a hidden love for her, but just how serious did it get?
Francis?
That's a really good question. Well, for one thing, they met together. So Brahms knocked on the Schumanns' door in Düsseldorf when they were already pretty famous as an artist couple. And Brahms had nothing published. And so he just played everything that he had in his suitcase for the Schumanns. And both of them were completely taken with this young man. He was 14 years younger than Clara. And so he became a quick family friend, like you said, very close. And then, unfortunately, a year later, I think, Robert Schumann checked himself into the asylum where he spent the last 2 years of his life. So he didn't really get a whole lot of chance to get to know Brahms and to spend time with him, although he did visit him when Clara wasn't allowed to. But then for the rest of their lives, like you said, Clara and he were very close. They would critique each other's compositions. He was called Uncle Brahms by the children, so he was close to the family. All I know is there was a conversation after Robert Schumann's death, about a month later, I think. They all went on a vacation, I think, to Switzerland for about a month. I think it was someone else and Clara and Brahms, and things were discussed. And after that, they kind of distanced themselves a little bit. They didn't get married. They didn't plan another marriage. So I think it was the love of his life. He never married again, but they decided to stay friends for the rest of their lives, and that friendship continued until both of their deaths, he dying only 1 year after Clara.
We'll come back. Max, thank you for that question. We'll go back in time a little bit, then take a closer look at what happened with Clara after the relationship and after her husband died. That relationship, though, because you mentioned that she spent a lot of time performing to be able to keep them, was he going through a period of time where he was doing a lot of writing as well?
Are you talking about during the first years of their marriage?
Yes.
Or before they were married?
No, in the first years of their marriage.
Yeah, well, those were some very productive years, the first 4 years where they lived in Leipzig together, after they finally got court permission to marry, because Friedrich still wouldn't allow it. They had to go to court. And then after this euphoria, you could maybe say, you've got his famous Liederjahr, 1840, where he composed over 138 songs. And then the next year, he started in a new genre and composed his first symphony, then the chamber music years. So these first years were definitely a time where he was churning out lots of new ideas in music. And of course, Clara was the first to critique them, to play them, to then slowly start to put them on her programs for the public to get to know and to listen to. And that's how she made him famous, or more famous, as a composer.
So were the compositions at that time, so she's performing to be able to keep them, and they had quite a few children as the time progressed as well, didn't they?
She was pregnant about every 2 years from the beginning on for about eight children. So she, I don't know how she kept up with her performing. It's quite phenomenal, really. They had two children in Leipzig, and then, of course, was always the question of what to do with them when she would go on her long tours, her concert tours. They went to Denmark, or she went on to Denmark in 1842, just the second year after they were married, and performed for the queen in Denmark as Clara Schumann for the first time. That also was not so sure that she would be accepted by society as Clara Schumann, this married woman performing. And then they went to Russia together, and of course the children had to stay somewhere else. They stayed with his brother's family for that 5 month period where they were traveling. So it was always a juggle to try to get the income and the family and still give him his peace and quiet that he needed to compose.
Was she primarily playing his music? So was she basically promoting his work?
I think she did that mostly later in life. After his death, she was really, that became her mission in life. And I think the first decade or so, or at least the first 5 years, she was very careful and pick and choose which pieces of his she would perform for which audiences. She learned that from her father, to carefully gauge your audience and to know what can they take and what new things can I bring to them, because she was very particular, but she wanted the audiences to understand her husband's music and couldn't stand it if they were not accepting or didn't get it. And so she was choosy.
What was happening with her composing at this time? Because we've already played a piece that she wrote when she was 15, 16. Is she writing still during this period of time?
She didn't write quite as much, but he did encourage her to compose next to all of the other things she did. And she actually dabbled in the same genre that he did in his Liederjahr. She wrote quite a few really extraordinary, exquisite songs. I, as a singer, love performing them as well. She has found her own voice, even though, of course, there are similarities to his, and they would exchange ideas, and they even came up with a joint song cycle where he, kind of as a joke, didn't tell the publisher who had written which song, but rather just wanted to publish it as a song cycle by Robert and Clara Schumann. So he definitely was still trying to promote her in dabbling in composing as well, which she was very good at.
Would he be as strong? I mean, I don't know if you can answer this question or not, but would he be as strong a composer if it wasn't for her?
I mean, the wood questions are always tough.
Yes.
I think he would not be as well known if it weren't for her. Same with Brahms. She did the same thing with him, promoting his music by putting it in her program, sandwiching it in there between pieces that she knew her audiences wanted to hear. So I think that his fame or his well-knownness definitely was... and of course, you know, you fine-tune each other. So she definitely would critique. You can see places where she edited his music. So, yeah, definitely he wouldn't be the same and he wouldn't be as well known.
Frances, as we're talking about Clara and her life, where do you get the information from?
Well, there are lots of biographies that have been written, so that's very fortunate. We have secondhand and firsthand information. The biographies, of course, are quoting a lot from letters and diaries that in the 19th century was kind of a fashion to, and you kind of knew in some cases. I'm sure the Schumanns knew that their diaries would be passed on to posterity. So they, we have this primary source information, and as new things come out, there's always new editions of letters that have been written. Sometimes letters are discovered. Just, I think this year, some letters were discovered. So it's kind of a mix of different sources.
What was their relationship like as they progressed through his fame and as he became more recognized as a composer, but also her being recognized as a great concert pianist?
I would imagine that after a couple of years, when they've kind of settled into their marriage and they had several more children, and her concert giving kind of subsided a little bit compared to her earlier years when she was a teen and touring all the time. And he was becoming more well-known and recognized as a composer. I would imagine that that kind of took the pressure out a little bit. So I imagine that there was quite a lot of pressure, especially on both of them, really, on her to earn the money so that he could compose in peace, but at the same time not be in the spotlight too much because she knew it kind of hurt his pride or society was maybe looking weirdly upon them. And for him, it was difficult always being kind of in her shadow and accompanying her on tours and being asked if he also does something with music or something like that. So I think I would imagine their relationship kind of relaxed into more of this union of artists a little bit more. But unfortunately, that's also when the difficulties set in with his health, and they didn't have that many years together, unfortunately.
So how is it that he found himself in an asylum? What was the circumstances around that?
Well, it was his choice. He did decide one day in 1854 to take his own life by jumping in the Rhine River. And he was unsuccessful at that attempt, was fished out by a fisherman, and then decided upon that he needed to go to an asylum. And so he had been having bouts of depression, I guess, in the years before that, and times of difficulty with the orchestra that he was conducting. And so this culminated in that decision. And then the doctors there tried an approach that was not just keep you there as an insane person, but rather trying to heal and trying to help. Clara was appreciative of that, but then also the doctors said, you're not allowed to visit because that might upset him. And so basically for the next 2 years, just until 6 days before he died, she was unable to visit him. And that was, I imagine, very, very tough on both of them.
You mentioned the relationship with Brahms earlier, but he was able to visit.
He was allowed to visit, yes, and they would take walks and talk, and sometimes Robert Schumann even composed or wrote some melodies out, and then eventually there was a bit of letter writing between Clara and Robert during that time. So that it was apparently he had good days and bad days, and days where he would be more awake and alert, and days where he was very lethargic. So we're not sure if the treatments that the doctors were trying really helped, but in any case, he deteriorated quite quickly in the end.
After his passing, was this and I'm not sure, and not because of any negative reasons, but was it in some ways a liberating time for Clara?
Well, she had already started right away when he was checked into the asylum. She had to figure out what she was going to do to earn an income, because he was no longer really getting one, or at least only for a short time. And so she had already started putting her life into place to start up her touring and her concerts again. And I think in a way it probably was a good distraction just from not knowing what was going to happen. And then, of course, she had to organize where to put all the children. Some went to boarding schools. Others went and lived with friends or friends of the family or family members. And she kind of started this routine that she continued for several more decades after he died, of performing during the year, and then for a few months in the summer, regrouping in a summer home with her family and her children and studying new repertoire, only to start the whole thing over again.
So this is when she did start. She was playing Brahms, and she was also playing some of Robert Schumann's work as well.
Yes, she really started making that, I guess, almost her mission to make sure that Robert Schumann's works were remembered and were edited correctly. So she became the main interpreter and the main editor of the full, complete edition of his works. That took her a while to publish, but she really wanted to do that. And then she took on Johannes Brahms as another project of hers, and promoting his music and him as an artist. So that became, I guess you could say, one of her main musical missions in life after his death.
And the relationship, this is when the relationship with Brahms, well, I understand that it was established earlier, but afterwards that they decided to remain friends and she was playing his work.
Yes, and they would visit each other regularly. They would write letters. I think there were only very short times where they had a fight or disagreement or something and they didn't write for a year maybe, and then they would pick it back up. And I think for the remainder of their lives, Brahms was for Clara and Clara for Johannes Brahms the main true friend who, you know, you could come to with any personal or musical issues. So in a way, he did kind of substitute a little bit the role that Robert Schumann had in this close musical companion.
And did she write around this time? Did she go back to writing, or did she mainly focus again on playing?
You know, she hardly composed after that. Robert Schumann had really encouraged her as long as they were married, especially in the early years. And then I think with the 7 children and then 6 grandchildren that she was needing to feed and take care of with her concertizing, and I think just her main passion was performing, I think that it just kind of fell by the wayside. She did compose a few things, but nothing compared to what she did as a girl.
It's pretty amazing, though, to be in a position where you're one of the major contributors in the support of two particularly well-recognized composers.
Right, and not only those two. She was one of the main Beethoven interpreters of the 19th century.
Wow.
Beethoven was hardly played. It's weird to remember this. In the 19th century, just maybe a few years after his death, his music was hardly played anymore. And not to mention Johann Sebastian Bach, Robert Schumann and Mendelssohn were huge Bach proponents. They wanted a real Bach revival. And Clara made it possible with her fame. So she really was a proponent of many composers, dead and alive, during her time. And it's thanks to her and other performers such as herself, like Franz Liszt, that we remember these composers today, and they're played regularly in our concert halls.
So is that how she changed the face of concert pianists and the role that concert pianists had?
I think that's one great part. Another innovation she had was to play from memory. So I guess her contemporary performers were a little bit weirded out by this, but her father thought that she would understand the music better if she performed it from memory. The norm was to perform it by looking at your music, your score. And she was one of the first to really establish that and to insist on entire piano recitals. So not a mixed bag of a singer here, then a violinist, then a little chamber quartet, then a piano piece, but rather an entire solo piano recital. She was one of the first people to establish that as well.
And as you said, we're pivotal as far as the recognition of classical music, in inverted commas, because she was playing those composers and recognizing those composers when others possibly weren't.
Right. Definitely.
What happened with the kids? Because she had an awful lot of them.
Yeah, she had 8. One of them, Emil, died at 18 months, though. So 7 who were a bit older, and the first two daughters that she had, Marie and Elise, were the ones to become also the oldest, and Marie especially kind of took care of all of her needs when she became a bit elderly and couldn't perform quite as much, or she took over some of the students that she had. So she was kind of her main, her right hand, I guess you could say. And then there were several other children. She outlived 4 of them. So one died of tuberculosis, Felix, who was named after their good friend Felix Mendelssohn Bartholdy. Ludwig had kind of a similar fate or sad fate compared to his father. He also was put in an asylum at the age of 20 and spent the rest of his life in the asylum until he was 41. Ferdinand, he was the one with the 6 children of his own. He unfortunately died pretty early after the Franco-Prussian War. He was addicted to morphine after having been wounded in the war, and so his children were left into the care of Clara. So it goes on, the list goes on, quite a lot of children and fates, and also sorrow for Clara.
How did she live out her life in the end?
How did she live out her life?
Yeah.
Well, she became one of the first, or the first ever piano professor, once she finally kind of settled down from all of the touring and concertizing and 19 tours to England. She became the first female piano professor in Frankfurt and taught there for 10 years. And that's where she died after a couple of strokes.
Why is it important that we recognize her? Because that's part of why we're talking to you, is that idea of recognition for Clara. Why is it important?
Well, I think that this year is, especially in Leipzig, where I work, it's such an interesting time to be thinking back on this woman who was born there 200 years ago in a time that's in some ways similar and in other ways so different from our time. And this woman, this performer was amazingly able to achieve things that even nowadays people are astonished at, and that in a time where women were not allowed to vote.
Yeah.
They didn't earn the main family's income and probably didn't even have a bank account, or if they did, the husband had total control over it. And Clara just kind of defied all of these norms, and yet she remained true to herself and always held her husband up in wanting him to get the recognition as a composer. So I think this dynamic of couple who really try to make the careers of one another work with one another, I think that has such a relevance for us today in a society where we still struggle with the roles of men and women in society, in relationships. And so I think it's so good to look at this inspiring woman and see a role model for such a strong personality who had a dream or had a dream thrust upon her and fought her way even against her father for someone that she loved, and then went on to fight for his recognition and to feed her children while she did it.
We're going to play three romances up to the news. Tell us about this piece.
Well, the three romances, I'm actually not sure at this moment when she wrote them. I do believe it was before she married him, so I think you'll be able to hear kind of a unique voice that's not dissimilar from Robert Schumann's. And if you listen, I don't think it'll be hard to miss the piano role that she gives. So the kind of virtuosic parts as well as the calmer parts, and you'll just see how refined her technique was, because I'm sure that she played these often, and she of course didn't want to bore herself as a performing pianist, so there's some caveats in there, but it's a beautiful, beautiful set of pieces.
Thank you, Frances.
Thank you.
It's the third part of the three parts of the three romances for violin and piano by Clara Schumann.